Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Yod Gimel, 313, the Mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur. So just one point I didn't make last time, which is I didn't mention the compromise opinion of the Ran regarding wearing shoes on Shabbos and Yom Kippur that are not made of leather, which is that we mentioned that there are many who hold that it doesn't matter what a shoe is made of, whether it's considered a real shoe, you know, in everyday life in order to be permissible to wear on Shabbos. If it goes around your foot...
On Yom Kippur, yeah.
Shabbos. Or Yom Kippur.
Oh, Shabbos.
Even on Shabbos, you know...
When you're actually wearing it or carrying it.
Right, so it doesn't matter. If it goes around your foot, if it's snugly, it's not going to fall off. And you might not, you know, so then it's considered a garment. It's considered a type of shoe. Even it doesn't... no relation to the permission to wear it on Yom Kippur. And, yeah, it's not a problem on Shabbos at all. Then the other shita is... then no, it has to be a shoe. If it's not... either it's a shoe or it's a burden. It's like you're carrying it. So if it's not considered a real shoe in halacha, to the extent that it would be usur to wear on Yom Kippur, so then you wouldn't be allowed to wear it on Shabbos or Yom Kippur either, because it would be a prohibition of hotzah of carrying. And there's an intermediate sheet to that of the Ran, which I thought you'd find interesting, which is that you're allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur and Shabbos if Yom Kippur falls on Shabbos. But a regular Shabbos during the year, you're not allowed to wear it. Because the prohibition of wearing leather shoes on Yom Kippur renders this thing permissible footwear on Yom Kippur. And therefore it's considered to be a real footwear as opposed to just a burden. But on a regular Shabbos during the year, so this is not considered normal footwear, so therefore it would be considered to be a burden. So you look at whether on that day it's considered normal footwear or not. So it's just an interesting intermediate shita. But again, regarding certainly things that are full-fledged shoes nowadays, regarding sneakers or wooden shoes, clogs, things like that don't fall off your feet, that fits snugly. So the accepted psak is that that is allowed to be worn on Shabbos. Yeah.
Now, parameters regarding, say, the dimensions of a beged, you know, for example, necktie.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, or a yarmulke or something like that?
It just depends on what's a normal garment.
Oh.
What's considered to be a normal garment in that place. I mean, the things that are objectively garment-like, you know, it's freezing outside and you had no other clothes, so a blanket is not something that's normally worn. Mm-hmm. But if you take a blanket and you wrap it, it's made of a soft garment-like material, and you wrap it around yourself and it keeps you warm, so that would be permissible to wear on Shabbos because that's objectively a garment-like thing. But there's something else, like, for example, a garbage bag, which is not of a garment-like material, it's made of plastic. Mm-hmm. So a garbage bag, it would not be allowed to do that on Yom Kippur unless you put it on yourself in a way that it prevented your body from getting wet. There's something called atzulei tinuf.
Wait, so there's a plastic bag that you put over a hat or something to keep it from getting wet.
Right, exactly. So a plastic bag that you put over a hat, so that's called atzulei tinuf. That prevents the hat from getting wet.
Yeah.
Look, if you had just the hat and you walked out in the rain, your head would remain perfectly dry.
Mm-hmm.
But your hat would get ruined.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, if you put a plastic bag over a hat, so that's not a normal garment. So therefore, that's considered carrying because it's only there to protect the hat. But if, for example, you had a straw hat,
mm-hmm,
and you wanted to walk outside in the rain, and not only would the hat get ruined, but the rain would seep in and it would make you very uncomfortable as well. So that would actually be permissible on Shabbos. There's a big machlokas regarding not plastic bags, but they're actually plastic hat covers,
mm-hmm,
that fit snugly over your hat, that are designed for hats.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that allowed to be worn on Shabbos or not? So most posting about that's usur. That's called atzulei tinuf. That the hat would be perfectly fine without the... your head would be perfectly fine without that. It's not considered to be a normal garment. Therefore, that would be usur to wear on Shabbos, a plastic actual hat cover. I'm not talking about a plastic bag. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a kula that he says, no, it's called a garment because designed to combine with your hat. It's made to the shape of the hat. It fits snugly on the hat. So therefore, when you wear this plastic hat cover, in essence, it's considered part of the hat and not a separate thing that you put on and just in order to protect the hat. Continuing in the Sefer Chinuch, v'din ketanim bein tinok bein tinokes me'eze zman me'anen osam kol hayom mitarabanon v'chein me'eze zman mechanchin osan l'shos. So we have a principle that a couple years, well, see, there's a disagreement about exactly how many, but a short while before Bar Bas Mitzvah, the child has to fast on Yom Kippur, Midrabanan, in order to prepare this child for the fasting at the relatively young age of 12 or 13, depending on gender. So, and a few years before that, you're supposed to have them fast hours. What does it mean, fasting hours? That, let's say, the child usually eats at 8 o'clock in the morning, so they should start eating, you know, they should start eating at 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. You should get them the idea to the use that they shouldn't be totally comfortable with their dietary, you know, availability on Yom Kippur. So, what's the story? L'chlala de milsa l'fiksas mina mefarshim. What do the commentators say? D'shtei shanim kodim gadlus bevari mashlimin midrabanan u'shtei shos kodim l'chach mechan chenos l'shos. So, there are different opinions in the Gemara and different opinions in the Rishonim of how to paskin. This is what the Sefer HaChanech is going with for now. That a boy has to fast fully on Yom Kippur at ages 11 and 12, and must fast hours, in other words, eat later in the morning, at ages 9 and 10. So he has to start getting in the habit of fasting 4 years before, 4 years before he actually has to fast midaraisa at age 13. And for a girl, it would obviously be, everything would be translated 1 year earlier, that she would have to start fasting at age 8, limited amount of time, and she would have to start fasting the full day at age 10. V'yesha perishu shana achas kodim gadlus mashlimim midrabanan beintinok beintinoka. Some say, no, it's only 1 year prior to Bar Bas Mitzvah that they have to fast the whole day midrabanan. V'yesha perishu shein mashlimim midrabanan. Rak betinokas levad. That you never have to fast the whole day midrabanan. Only a girl. Only a girl has to fast the whole day. A boy, even at age 12, he doesn't have to fast the whole Yom Kippur, but a girl has to fast the whole day at age 11. Why? Because girls are stronger than boys. So you heard it here first. You know, it's in halacha. Well, that's dangerous. It's the child at that point doesn't know what on earth is going on. If you don't feed a child at age 1 for an extra time, they'll just scream and scream and scream and scream.
That's not an issue then, right?
Right here, you can reason with them a little bit, saying, you know, in a couple of years you're going to have to fast the whole day, so we're trying this out, that we're feeding you later in the morning. The night, you know, they should fast the whole night, if at all possible, the child should fast, again, once they get to this type of age, they should fast the entire night, plus a couple hours in the morning. So shana achas kodem gadlus, so maybe it's only a girl who has to start fasting at age 11, aval tinok eino mashlim klal midrabanan, and a boy never has to fast the entire day. He only has to do this shows. He only has to fast. He only has to fast a couple extra hours in the morning. Fine. So this is subject to a great deal of controversy, as we indicated in the Sefer HaChinuch. And basically, the way it comes out in Shulchan Aruch is basically not giving an absolute time. These are more like guidelines. It depends on the child. This child is, you know, very strong and very strong-willed, and you know is up for it. So you can follow the most machmir guidelines that 4 years before Bar Mitzvah they start fasting extra time in the morning, and then 2 years before Bar and Bas Mitzvah they will begin fasting the entire day. But if the child is a weak child and can't really handle it, even they're not going to be, not dangerous. If it's dangerous, so obviously feed them even when they're after Bar Bas Mitzvah on Yom Kippur. But even if it's a weak child and they really have a tough time of it, then they do not have to. Neither a girl nor a boy would have to fast the entire day at all before becoming Bar Bas Mitzvah. So you have to. The final halacha leaves a great deal of flexibility regarding exactly the parameters of fasting for a child before Bar Mitzvah. Yeah.
When
it's
determined at the age of 12, a boy becomes responsible as opposed to 9 or 10.
You mean 13?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's 13. Hold on. The Sefer HaChinuch says, not exactly answering your question, but let's just read one more line. The gadlus ubetino yud gimel shana biyom echad, betinokes yud beis shana viyom echad. that a boy turns bar mitzvah and is required to fulfill all the mitzvahs at age 13 and one day. What's age 13 and one day? If the child was born on the 12th of Kislev, what age does the boy become? And 13 years later, what date does the boy become bar mitzvah?
The
13th. Oh, that's because you're an English speaker. Mm-hmm. In English, when you say someone is 13 and one day old, indeed, you would mean the 13th of, they would be 13th of Kislev. But no, what it really means is you become bar and bas mitzvah on your 12th or 13th birthday, because you've completed the 12th, the 13th year, and you are now starting the first day of your 14th year. That's why it's confusing for English speakers, but really you become bar and bas mitzvah on your Hebrew birthday. So why these ages? And he doesn't mention, by the way, that on a d'oraisa level, it's insufficient just to attain this age. One needs to have physical signs of maturity, which is determined in halacha as being two pubic hairs. But generally, when we assume that when a person turns 12 or 13, we assume that a person, you don't check, and you assume that a person would be a gadol an adult, a halachic adult at that age without having to actually check for the physical signs. They have to fast on Yom Kippur and they count for a minyan.
They can't land
and all these things.
Oh,
so there are certain things where if you're not really, okay, if you counted you for a minyan and you're not really a full halachic adult on a d'oraisa level, okay, it's not the end of the world. In general, for things that are certainly d'rabbanan, then it's not such a big deal, because the Chachamim said so. We assume that at age 12 and 13, so you're a full halachic adult. But there are certain things where it's very, very problematic if you're not a full halachic adult, such as chalitza. Such as chalitza, that let's say in Nebuch, a woman, her husband dies childless, so she has to undergo chalitza, but the only available brother is 11 years old. So Nebuch, she has to wait 2 years in order to be freed to remarry, because she has to undergo chalitza with this brother, because the brother is not allowed to undergo chalitza, not allowed to perform chalitza, it's ineffective before he's 13 years old. So if such a situation were to occur, and she's like, no, you know, I've been dating already this guy, and I want to get married. You're 13 years old. It's your 13th birthday. I want my chalitza. She probably shouldn't be dating. Yeah, okay. So she did anyway. So she's been dating this guy. And she says on her brother-in-law's 13th birthday, she says, no, I don't want to wait anymore. I want to get married as soon as possible. It's your 13th birthday, so give me chalitza. So under those circumstances where the consequences would be very bad on a deraisa level, if he's not actually a full halachic adult, then it's under such circumstances, one would indeed need to check for the signs of physical maturity. But as one would imagine, that such a case is extremely rare, that one would need to check for signs of physical maturity. And normally we just assume that age 12 and 13, so a girl and boy, respectively, are considered to be a bar and bas mitzvah. Again, if a child is a little older, so you could tell by other signs. So for example, you know, if the girl is obviously developing signs of physical maturity, at ages, you know, 16, whatever, she obviously has the form of an adult woman, if she does. So then that would be considered to be a full-fledged sign. You wouldn't actually need to check for the two hairs. Same thing, too. So if a boy is aged, mid-teenager, and he's already growing facial hair, so then it's clear that has the halachic signs of physical maturity. So you wouldn't need to check. The only situation where you need to check is if it was very close to age 13, and you weren't really sure whether the appropriate signs of physical maturity are there. But again, that would only be only in extremely rare cases, which are basically unheard of nowadays. And how does it determine that this was the age? So it's a little earlier for a girl than for a boy, because as well known, so girls generally hit puberty before boys. They mature faster. And this was determined to be a standardized time. This is the received tradition, Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. This is the standardized time when we can assume to have a confluence of the physical and the mental maturity that are required for observing the mitzvahs.
But there are no sources in the Torah itself.
The Torah doesn't say explicitly, no. It's just a received tradition. That's what we work with in Judaism. Okay. V'hamelech v'hakala b'rechitza b'yom zeh ma'dinan. So the king is allowed to wash his face on Yom Kippur, and a bride within 30 days of her wedding are allowed to wash their face on Yom Kippur, even though normally we have a prohibition of washing on Yom Kippur, unless one is actually physically dirty. Nevertheless, these people, it says, Melech b'yofio techezeno einecha, that the king can never appear in public in less than absolutely stunning physical characteristics. So if he doesn't wash his face in the morning, so he's not going to be as fresh. And it's the king should never be seen in such a manner. So the king is allowed to wash his face. Again, either because the whole prohibition of washing on Yom Kippur is midrabanan, and the Chachamim legislated a specific exception when they imposed the prohibition of washing on Yom Kippur, or even if the prohibition of washing on Yom Kippur is midaraisa, this would not be considered a rechitza shel tanug, that the only thing that's aser midaraisa is an enjoyable, a washing that's for enjoyable purposes. So since the king is doing it just for his halachic duty and not for his pleasure of washing his face, then it would be permissible on a daraisa level. And the Chachamim never imposed a restriction on this midrabanan either. And for the reason for a bride is that for the first 30 days, a bride is especially sensitive to not appearing at full level of grooming in front of her new husband. First 30 days. First 30 days. First 30 days, yeah. First 30 days of her marriage. So she would be allowed to wash her face, lest her husband see her with unwashed face and be turned off. But after 30 days, they're already more used to each other. So he says, oh yeah, I remember the first 30 days, you know, you look great because you wash your face every morning. Now, okay, once in a while, you know, I see you with an unwashed face, so it's not so bad. And it's interesting that the Chai Odom in 18th century Lithuania said that this permission is not relevant anymore because since the husband will be spending the entire day in shul anyway and he's barely going to see her, so there's no real point for her to wash her face. But they say not like that. No, he's going to see her. Maybe their shul has a break. Maybe
she goes to shul too.
Well, she'll be in the women's section.
Maybe they walk to shul together.
Right. Maybe she's okay.
Maybe they get up at the same time.
Yeah. Maybe he'll look over the mechitza and see her. Okay, in those days, probably you couldn't see over the mechitza. Probably it's pretty solid, but okay. Fine, but that's why others argue on this, because it is still possible that they'll see each other during the day, but okay. That's just an interesting shita of the Chai Adam. Fine. Ve'od azkirloch kan. Masha'amru zichronam levracha gam kein b'inyan tainis tishabav hayyadua shehumi d'rabanan. So he says, well, I'm writing the Sefer Chinuch, which is based on the 613 mitzvos of the Torah, and is one of those 613 mitzvos to fast on Tisha B'Av? Obviously not, because Tisha B'Av came much later with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So he said, well, I'm not going to really have any other opportunity to discuss Tisha B'Av, and I really would like to tell you some of the halachos of Tisha B'Av, so while I'm discussing Yom Kippur, I'll throw in a little bit about Tisha B'Av as well. These 2 days, they have similar halachos in certain respects, but their mood is completely different. Tisha B'Av is sad, whereas Yom Kippur is supposed to be solemn, uplifting,
right.
Hopeful, exactly, right. But not sad, not at all, sad, which is interesting that there's that comes to a very practical difference, which is that there is something that many shuls do on Motzei Tisha B'Av and Motzei Yom Kippur, which is Kiddush Levana.
Oh, okay.
Kiddush Levana, again, strictly speaking, why wait until the 9th or 10th of the month to make Kiddush Levana? We hold that you can make Kiddush Levana after 3 days after the Molad. So why wait to do it? So on Yom Kippur, so the classical minhag was that you wait to do Kiddush Levana until Motzei Yom Kippur because the Seres Yomei Tshuva are stressful and it's not a proper time for the happy mitzvah of Kiddush Levana. And you don't make a Kiddush Levana during the 9 days because it's a very sad time. Again, not appropriate for the happy mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, which is why a lot of the classical minhag Ashkenaz was that you wait until Motzei Tisha B'Av to make Kiddush Levana, and Motzei Yom Kippur to make Kiddush Levana. The Vilna Gaon didn't go for this. The Vilna Gaon said, you can't wait so long to make Kiddush Levana, you should make it in the earliest opportunity. So he says, no, you're allowed to make Kiddush Levana during Aseres Yemei Tshuva and during the 9 days as well. So that the opinion of the Vilna Gaon is much more accepted for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva than it is for the 9 days, for the reason the Mishnah Berurah says that you can make Kiddush Levana. No, we should accept the opinion of the Vilna Gaon that you are allowed to make Kiddush Levana during Aseres Yemei Tshuva because it's not so sad. And look, an extra mitzvah. Maybe God is weighing you on the scales. It's a little bit of a balance. Then you make Kiddush Levana. Oh, an extra mitzvah. Oh, you make Kiddush Levana, so you're going to be sealed for a good judgment on Kippur. So that's why I think the normal Ashkenazi minhag nowadays is that, based on the Mishnah Berurah, is that we do make Kiddush Levana before Yom Kippur, but we do not make Kiddush Levana before Tisha B'Av, although there are people who make Kiddush Levana before Tisha B'Av as well.
But in general, we wait until Motzei Shabbos, though.
Right, some people do, yeah.
You're being practical, you're going to have a minion there, a little bit there.
No, the reason you wait for, yes, okay. It's also practical as the minion, but the reason you wait till Motzei Shabbos is because you're dressed in Shabbos clothes, so it's considered to be a greater honor for the mitzvah. Again, not everybody agrees to that either. The Vilna Gaon doesn't agree with that either. Other poskim say, no, you should do it immediately after 3 days in order to do it at the earliest time possible. So, but regarding Kiddush Levana, so the poskim say, so ordinarily you're not supposed to make Kiddush Levana when you're barefoot, when you're not wearing shoes, because it's not considered for the honor of the bracha. So they say, on Motzei Yom Kippur, you're allowed to make Kiddush Levana before you put on your shoes, because the reason you're not wearing shoes is a happy reason, that we're just freed from all our sins. Wonderful, 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 so happy we're not wearing shoes. But on Motzei Tisha B'Av, because the lack of shoes is because of Avelos, is because of mourning, so therefore you're supposed to put on your shoes after Tisha B'Av before making Kiddush Levana. So again, even though this is just one illustration of how the mood of the two and the interpretation of these halachos are different, even though on paper they seem to be very similar for Yom Kippur and for Tisha B'Av. Lefi Shashem Tainis Kolam the Daber Bomat. So since they're both fast days, so I'll talk about both. V'odiach Shechmiru Bo Chachomim B'chol Inyano Kemo B'Yom HaKippurim L'Hafzik Mi B'od Yom. So the Tisha B'Av, so the Chachomim were stringent about Tisha B'Av similarly to how stringent they were about Yom Kippur. So one example is that we know that on normal fast days in Halacha, the majority of fast days, whether it's a Tainis Chalom for a bad dream, or whether it's fasting a Yartzei Tainis, or whether it's the regular, the minor, the quote-unquote minor fast days, Asar B'Tevis, Yeshiv Asar B'Tammuz, etc. We know that in normal fasting in Judaism, Lahavdil, like our cousins, the Muslims, also fasting by them is from dawn to dusk. It starts it's only during the daytime. It does not include the night. You eat and drink during the night in order to prepare yourself for the upcoming fast ahead, which starts at dawn, the first light, and concludes until dusk, until the halachic day is over at Tzeis HaKochavim. So, but by Tisha B'Av, we don't take advantage of that leniency, and for Tisha B'Av, we begin fasting before sunset. We fast the entire halachic day of 24, 25 hours, and we begin the fast before sunset on the day before, on the Erev, on Erev Tisha B'Av, and we continue until Tzeis HaKochavim. It's interesting that one thing he doesn't mention, even regarding Yom Kippur, is that there is something about Yom Kippur that Pashtus does not carry over to Tisha B'Av, which is the requirement of Tosefes, adding time. That on, we know that the Torah says, Me'erev ad Erev Tishbisu Shabbatchem, that you should fast from evening to evening on Yom Kippur. So one thing you're supposed to do is you're supposed to add time, just like, again, according to most shittas, it's how we paskin. The majority shita is that it applies to every Shabbos and Yantif, but it's fundamentally learned from Yom Kippur. According to the Rambam, actually, the requirement of Tosefes applies only to Yom Kippur. It does not apply to Shabbos and Yantif, which is very interesting. We don't paskin like that. But the certainly applies to Yom Kippur, at least the requirement to add weekday time, both before Yom Kippur begins and afterwards. You're not allowed to look at the clock and, you know, have a sandwich at hand or be drinking a milkshake or something. And, you know, you have an atomic clock then. You have the exact astronomical time for sunset. So you'd literally take your last sip before, at the exact last second before sunset. That's not allowed. You have to add time on to Yom Kippur beforehand and afterwards. Afterwards as well. After it's Tzeisa Kochav and Mikra Adin, you have to add a little bit of extra time to Yom Kippur. So you have to add a certain amount of time. So how much time do you have to add? So after Yom Kippur, the truth, what?
Depends on the shita.
Well, it's true, that's true. It depends on the shita. So if you come to shul, so it's not really a big issue. If you get into shul in time for Kol Nidre, and you have, you after Yom Kippur, you daven Ma'ariv with the shul, and you don't eat it until afterwards, so then you have to sefes. Pashtus, you have to sefes. But let's say you're not going to shul, so what's the minimum required shita? What if also a regular Shabbos and Yom Tif, what's the minimum required? 35 minutes. Whoa, Mrs. Hirsch, Chumra, wow. Ooh. You pask in 35 minutes? Unbelievable. Okay, maybe. No, the Pashas understanding is that according to most shitas, it's approximately 2 minutes. Has to be a significant amount of time. In other words, it shouldn't be able to be confused with, oh, you're not sure your clock is accurate, and you know we may, but you really are wanting and fundamentally want to go down to sunset to the last second. It has to be an amount of time you can sink your teeth into. That I'm refraining from doing malacha, not because I'm afraid that it's really Shabbos, because I'm adding time from the weekday until Shabbos. So that's Me'ikar Adin according to most poskim, but some poskim are machmer. I think Rav Shechtar is machmer like the Shita Rishonim, even on a regular Shabbos. They doesn't do malacha for a half an hour before sunset. One half an hour.
He's not a woman.
At the end, how about
Well, a woman normally refrains from doing malacha for 18 minutes, so it's only 12 more minutes.
I'm talking about the end of Shabbos.
Yeah? Okay. Oh, in the end of Shabbos. So the end of Shabbos, so the Zman that we give for Motzei Shabbos, strictly speaking, probably already includes the Tosefes. Because it's a little bit, it's Tzeis Kochav Meikar Adin is when you can see three stars in the sky. We hold small stars the Chumrah, but if you see three small stars in the sky, no matter where in the sky they appear. So the Zman that we give for Motzei Shabbos is when you can see three small stars in the sky, not all over the sky, but in one place close together. So since we're more machmir about the Zman of Tzeis HaKochavim regarding Motzei Shabbos, so strictly speaking, that includes the Tosefes. But I recommend, why not, a few more minutes. You can end if you can, so we'll wait a few more minutes.
Most people that say Shabbos wait an extra half an hour, sometimes. I thought it was 35 minutes. After the...
Because they wait what they think is the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, which is you end Motzei, that Shabbos ends 72 minutes after sunset. Yeah.
After sunset, which is exactly...
Our Zman for Motzei Shabbos and from our shul, which I believe to be correct, is it varies. In different times of year, it varies. It goes from about a little under 40 minutes to a little over 50 minutes, depending on the time of year and depending on the astronomical reality of when you can see stars at that time of year. In the height of the summer, it takes longer after sunset to see stars than it does in the spring and fall. Okay, so if you're at your daughter's house for Shabbos and they wait 72 minutes after sunset to do malacha, so good, voila, good, you got your Tosefes. For sure your Tosefes. Even with my Zman, I think, strictly speaking, there's Tosefes. But even if I would recommend waiting a couple more minutes, because why not? You want to use such a rush to get back to weekdays. But if you wait 72, that's, in my opinion, that's for sure good. And you don't have, I think less. But if you're at your daughter's house, you certainly don't have to worry, I'm saying, about... about the mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos, at least on the end.
With Tisha B'Av, don't some of the signs of Havelos carry over to the next day?
Correct, but in terms of the observances of the day itself, there is no Tosefes, according to 99% of Poskim. There is a very minority opinion in the Rishonim that there's Tosefes Tisha B'Av as well, but A, we don't Poskim like that, but B, it's not really relevant, usually. Because what, you're eating literally the last minute, you don't even stop eating 2 minutes before sunset, and when you by the time you're finished with Ma'ariv and Motzei Tisha B'Av and you get home and you prepare your meal, what, you eat as soon as your clock you're looking at your atomic clock, and you know, as soon as it turns the zman that it says, that you put a bite right in your mouth. I mean, maybe some people do, but again, strictly mikra, then that would be okay. I'm just saying, even just practically speaking, most people are choshesh for this very minority shita that that there is Tosefes Tisha B'Av as well, simply because it's impractical to go really so far down to the wire. But again, on for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and certainly for Yom Kippur, so even that, you should make a conscious effort to have Tosefes Shabbos. For again, for women lighting candles, so that it's not really going to be an issue. But for a man, you should sometimes, you know, people get to shul and they're still doing malachis, or you know, people get to shul and we maybe, you know, we're dragging around a little bit before we get a minyan till mincha. We start very close to sunset mincha.
Is there any sign before which you're not allowed to light candles?
Plag hamincha.
What is that?
It depends on the time of year, but it's based on the idea of an hour and a quarter before sunset. In the summer, it can be closer to an hour 45 minutes, in the winter, closer to an hour. Depends. An hour and a, but if you light candles at Plag HaMincha, that's great Tosefes. That's fantastic. That's the maximum Tosefes you can have.
You're a lot more organized person than I am.
Yeah. But there are different minhagim as to when you light candles. Our minhag, the normal minhag in America is 18 minutes.
But except in the summer, if you're in a shul that darkens.
Right, so that's great Tosefes Shabbos. I love that. It's a great kiyum of the mitzvah Tosefes Shabbos to make what's called early Shabbos. Also because there is a sheet of the Ritva that it's insufficient for Tosefes Shabbos just to refrain from doing malacha. According to the majority opinion, I'm not saying you have to be choshesh for the Ritva. According to the majority opinion, you just consciously refrain from doing malacha for a few minutes before Shabbos actually begins, and that's Tosefes Shabbos. So according to the Ritva, you have to be makabel Shabbos with a liturgical method, either by making kiddush early or by davening early. So if you daven early in the summer, so that's vaday Tosefes Shabbos. That's the greatest Tosefes Shabbos that there could be. So there is what to be said for that.
So wait, that doesn't interfere with Plag HaMincha?
No, you daven after Plag HaMincha. Early Shabbos in the summer is always after Plag HaMincha. Yeah. Fine. The same thing goes for Motzi Shabbos, that according to some Shitas, that you're really not supposed to daven, if at all possible, on Motzi Shabbos Ma'ariv until after the Zman of Tosefes. Which is why there are some shuls that they give two Zmanim. They say Ma'ariv is 5:50 and Motzi Shabbos is 6 o'clock. What's the thinking behind that? They're in such a rush to end Shabbos that they want Shabbos to be over when they finish davening Ma'ariv. They want to start davening Ma'ariv before Shabbos is really over.
Is that cool?
No, it's not cool. And they want it, again.
Happy Shabbos!
How do you say Mavil in Shon Esrei and not take effect?
The idea is, first of all, we pass in an emergency, the same thing as you're allowed to make, you're allowed to daven the Shmon Esrei of Friday night earlier on Friday afternoon after Plag HaMincha. So you're Yotzei the Shmon Esrei of Motzi Shabbos, even if you daven from Plag HaMincha. Again, it's not proper to do that, but that's their thinking. You're allowed to say that because you're preparing for Shabbos. And also part of the thinking is that may be already a Tzeiso Kochavim Me'ikar Adin, and the Zman that we give for Motzi Shabbos is a little bit of a Chumra, so we're allowed to start davening that. But I still don't think it's proper. I think you should not begin Ma'ariv and Motzi Shabbos until after what would strictly speaking be considered the Zman for the Tosefes, and the Zman you would give for Motzi Shabbos. Also hashkafically, it's wrong because it shows this attitude of, you know, we have to start doing malacha at the earliest possible opportunity, so we're going to daven early in order that right when we're finished we can rush off and do malacha.
Yippee!
exactly.
Exactly. It's still Shabbos, and you're davening
right.
Weekday
Ma'ariv. Right. I mean, they will hold Me'ikar Hadin. No, maybe it's not really. And they just not. Okay. That's. I'm not saying. I'm not saying it's totally crazy and there's nothing on which to rely, but I still think it's a very improper improper practice. The famous story with Rav Soloveitchik that he was davening in Warsaw in the Chassidish Shtibel, he davened Mincha on Shabbos, and they had a Shalosh Shudas, and the Shalosh Shudas went forever. It was already, you know, an hour or two into the night, and they were singing the songs from Shalosh Shudas over and over and over and over. This little Litvish kid, you know, asks one of the Chassidim, when are we davening Mariv? So the elderly chassid said, Yingla, you're in such a rush to get back to weekdays. What is this? Why are you in such a rush? Shabbos is so wonderful. Shouldn't even ask what we're davening Mariv. When it comes, it comes. Nope. Which is also something in our shul, that all the zmanim are rounded. All the zmani tefillah are rounded to the nearest 5 minutes. But the zman for Motzi Shabbos is given to the exact minute, 5:13. So that also, you know, again, if all the zmanim are exact, so it's not so bad, but it's also somewhat hashgafikling that you're davening Mariv, for davening Mariv and Motzi Shabbos, you're not even going to round it to the later 5 minutes. Okay. Fine. So, Zog the Sefer Chinuch, weiter. So again, all these things that are prohibited on Yom Kippur are prohibited on Tisha B'Av as well. Washing, anointing, wearing shoes, having marital relations. So it says, pregnant and nursing women fast on Tisha B'Av the same way they're required to fast on Yom Kippur, which is not the case on the other minor fast days. Now, we mentioned last time that Medina de Gemara, a pregnant or nursing woman under any circumstances, even if she feels wonderful, is not required to fast on the minor fast days. So even that nowadays we go like the Dina de Gemara, and this is a normally accepted psak, is that even if they feel wonderful, which it says in some of the classical poskim in the Shulchan Aruch, that if they feel absolutely wonderful, then they should fast on the minor fast days. But we normally hold nowadays that we go back to the Dina de Gemara, that all pregnant and nursing women, no matter what, should not fast on the minor fast days. There's a very cute machlokas regarding a nursing woman. That how long does the Gemara say that a woman nurses after giving birth? When at what age is a child weaned, the standard age?
3 years.
Two.
Because, sir,
two. But so it says that the standard time frame for nursing is 2 years. So, and a woman, classically in halacha, even if she's not actually nursing, even Rachman al-Litzan, if the child dies before the time of 2 years, she's considered to be nursing halachically for 2 years. Why? I mean, how does that manifest itself? For example, for the laws of Vestas, that when a woman has to predict when she's going to have her period, and then she has to refrain from relations with her husband on that day. So a woman who's not assumed halachically to be menstruating would not have to keep the laws of Vestas. So a pregnant woman and a nursing woman do not have to keep the laws of Vestas, because they're not assumed to be having their period at any time soon. So the classical psak is that a woman does not have to keep Vestas for 2 years after she gives birth, no matter what. Even if the child dies, even if she stops nursing, for 2 years after she gives birth, she does not have to keep her Vestas, because she is halachically considered to be nursing, and she does not get her period during that time. So even if she does have a blood flow, so it's considered to be like a freak thing, and she doesn't have to be concerned that she can predict her future blood flows based on this freak occurrence. That's very difficult, obviously, nowadays. Nowadays, if a woman stops nursing, normally, whoever she wants to stop nursing, 9 months, 1 year, a year and a half, whenever it is. So normally, it might take a little while for the cycle to get back in whack, but she starts getting periods regularly, very regularly, the same as before she gave birth. So that's why the poskim say that nowadays, a woman, once she sees that she's starting to get her period in a regular manner, that she should be choshesh she should concern herself l'chumra with the laws of Vestas. So the question is, does this apply also to fasting? Do you say that a woman should not fast on minor fast days for 2 years after giving birth, no matter what? Whether she's still actively nursing, whether she's not nursing, whether she stopped nursing after 3 months, whether she 2 years after birth, she should not fast on the minor fast days. What do you think?
Get a jail free card.
It's a machlokes. It's a machlokes. There are poskim that say that a woman does not need to fast on the minor fast days for 2 years after she gives birth, no matter what her actual nursing status is. I wouldn't. I personally would not pass it like that, but okay, there is a sheet like that. I personally would pass in that once a woman has recovered from the actual physical process of nursing, then she should fast on the minor fast days if she feels okay, she feels up to it.
Is there a differentiation between Tinus Esther and the other three minor fast days?
Yeah, Tinus Esther is more lenient. Tinus Esther is a later minug. It's not one of the fast days. That's what's called Midivrei Kabbalah. That's already mentioned in Tanakh by the Nevi'im. Right, that's more lenient, Tinus Esther. It says that on Tinus Esther, again, there are different standards. Like we said, for Yom Kippur, it's putting yourself in mortal danger, even down the line. These are not that's the only thing that exempts you from fasting. On Tisha B'Av, it's becoming very ill. On regular fast days, it's feeling significantly worse than one would normally feel not eating and drinking for 24 hours, feeling quite off and a little ill. For Tinus Esther, it says that even if you have an eye ache, then you don't have to fast on Tinus Esther.
Or if you fall asleep during the Megillah, how's that?
Yeah. If you fall asleep in the Megillah, you can rectify it. There's always a way to rectify it. You have to hear it again later. That happened once in yeshiva. I was a little offended because I was laning, but one of the after the nighttime Megillah reading, I was in Yerushalayim also. Actually, it was not Motzi Tinus Esther. So in Yerushalayim, we were landing on the 15th. The Tinus Esther is on the 13th.
Oh, okay, wasn't
it? Was not even Motzei. It was wasn't even still fasting. But someone asked to borrow the Megillah after the landing. He said that he fell asleep during the landing. He wasn't yotzei. He has to read over. Okay, there's always a way to do it. It was an interesting shaila I heard recently that someone booked a flight. Like, remember, I booked my flight on Sarah Batavis coming back from Europe. So someone booked a flight from the west coast to the east coast on the end of Tinus Esther going into the night of Purim. So what should they do about Megillah reading? They have to cancel their flight. I mean, I wasn't once someone told me about the Shaila. I wasn't actually asked the Shaila, but I thought that maybe that first of all, the one option is to borrow a Megillah and try to do some sort of rudimentary reading on the plane. That if either the husband or the wife, you know, could manage basically halachically acceptable Megillah reading, then that would be one solution. Another solution is when they land on the East Coast, so if it's before Alos HaShachar, it's halachically nighttime, then they can have someone wake someone up at 3 a.m.
Oh, sweet.
And lay in the Megillah for them. But they have to hear it. So if there's really no other choice, then you do have to cancel your flight.
If you just plain read it without...
Your yotze, yeah. It's not a mitzvah min amufchar. It's not ideal, but it's your yotze if you pronounce all the words correctly, most of the words correctly, and correctly enough to get the idea across, then your yotze. Yeah, you should pronounce every word correctly, and that's certainly the proper thing to do. But yeah. So chutz mi shalosh tanios emtsoyos shel atziras matar. So there's a special series of fasts that happened in Eretz Yisrael when rain did not fall. So when rain did not fall, there was a series of fasts that was decreed by the Beis Din. So the most intense of these fasts was considered to be the middle ones. That there was a series of the first set of fasts, the middle set of fasts, and the end set of fasts. So the pregnant and nursing women will also fast during the middle fasts of the repentance fast that wanted to encourage God to bring the rains. The Ravashi's conclusion is that in Maseches Tainis. And also one thing that he did mention was that you don't have the concept of Tainis Shos, that a child does not have to fast at all before age of bar and bas mitzvah on Tisha B'Av, or the minor fast days in order to train themselves, because the whole institution is not midiraisa. The whole training is only midiraisa. Again, if there's a fantastically strong child who wants to fast when he gets close to the age of bar mitzvah, so we wouldn't stop him or her, but it's not a requirement. B'yasar prati mitzvah zo mivorim maseches yoma are explained in the masechta of the Gemara that deals with the laws of Yom Kippur. B'negus b'chol makom b'chol zman in all places and time is b'charim and kevos, males and females. B'ovir al zav v'achal b'yom kippurim kishir k'kasevas b'tal asay. If you eat the size of a date on Yom Kippur, you neglect the form of positive commandment. V'ovir alav sheish b'karis, you violated the negative commandment that forbids eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, shenemar. And your chayiv karis kichol anefesh asher lo su'na be'etzav hayom hazeh v'nichrasa. If you eat and drink on this day, again, not the other types of inuyim, even if they are midaraisa, it only applies to eating and drinking, you would have to bring a korban chatos. Mitzvah shin yod daled, mitzvah korban musaf, biyom asiri betishri. The mitzvah of korban musaf on the day of Yom Kippur, shunikra Yom Kippur, 314. Lehakriv korban musaf beasor lachodesh ashvi. To offer up the additional offering on the 10th day of the 7th month, shenemar ach be'asor lachodesh v'yigraftemi shel Hashem. Seir Pinchas as hakorba perish hakorba kibosh hagasav sham v'yigraftemi olal Hashem. And the later on in Sefer Bamidbar, it explains exactly what the korban musaf is, which it did not explain over here in Sefer Vayikra. V'yigraftemi olal Hashem reach nichoach par ben bakar echad, one bull, ayel echad, one ram, kivasim b'nei shana shiva, and seven lambs. V'zeh hakosav Sheba Pinchas, Hevi Aramim Zichron Levracha b'Minyano, but he goes after the Akodim Torah, Hakol Olalin Yanechad. So even though the Rambam in his order of Sefer HaMitzvos, he brought the mitzvah of Korban Musaf in Sefer Bamidbar with all the other Korbanos there, I'm just bringing it in the order of the Torah, as it's first mentioned over here in Sefer Vayikra. Bishor Shem Mitzvos Korban HaMuzuk Zazdino Kvar Gazavti Sham Mashiadati Vusav HaPesach Sheba Seder Zetz, to draw your attention again to the holiness of the day with extra Korban. So all of the same reasoning. Mitzvah shin tesvav shelo lasos malacha basara b'tishrei, not to do malacha on the 10th day of Tishrei. Shelo lasos shum malacha biyom kippurim, not to do any malacha v'yom asiri lachodesh Tishrei shenemar be'asor lachodesh shvi v'chusi basrei v'chol malacha lo sasu b'etzom yom hazeki yom kippurim hu lechaper aleichem. Shouldn't do any malacha milas ki hu ki. Why do you should you refrain from labor? Again, it's to draw your attention to the day that you shouldn't be doing all your other stuff. He's going out of order in our version of Sefer Chinuch. He's referring to what he says that what we have is mitzvah shin yod zayin, which is two mitzvahs from now. So I'm not going to explain it again when I explained it already over there. Mitzvah shinta zayin, shelo lechol v'tish lishtos v'yom kippurim, the negative commandment not to eat and drink on Yom Kippur, mitzvah 316. Shelo lechol v'lishtos v'yom kippurim, shenemar kichol anefesh asher lo su'na be'etzem v'yom hazeh v'nichrasa. That if you don't observe the prohibition of fasting, then you'll receive the penalty of karis. Kol inyan mitzvah zo kosavti l'mal b'seder zeh mitzvah saseh yudvav ayin sham ki karov hu. That he explained all the details in the mitzvah saseh version of the requirement to fast, and he's not going to repeat it again in the prohibition to eat and drink. Mitzvah shin yud zayin 317. Let's make a run for it. Let's finish all these in yanim of Yom Kippur, and then we can get to Sukkot next time. 317. Mitzvah shvisa mi malacha biyom kippurim, to refrain from malacha on Yom Kippur. Lishbos mikol malacha biyom kippurim, to refrain from all labor on Yom Kippur. Shenemar shabbas shabbason hilachem, a Sabbath of Sabbaths, a super Sabbath. That's a mitzvah saseh. It calls it a shabbason. It doesn't say thou shalt rest on Yom Kippur, but since it says shabbas shabbason hu lachem, that's a positive statement. It is a super Sabbath for you. That's a positive commandment. Kolomer shepirshu keilu yomar shivsu biyom zetz. As if it says rest on this day. Mishor shehamitzvah al tzad apshad kedei shelo niya trudim b'shum davar v'nosim kol machshavteinu v'chol kavanoseinu levakesh mechila. That we should have all our efforts and attention focused on asking for forgiveness from God on the day of Yom Kippur, and shouldn't be distracted by going to work. that this day is established for specifically for forgiveness of sins from the day that the world was created. So this is the day. It has supernatural powers, and divine powers of forgiveness are dedicated to this day. Anything, there's a basic rule. If you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos, you're not allowed to do it on Yom Kippur. In other words, for the other festivals, we have leniencies regarding preparation of food. So on Yom Kippur, that would be a little silly because you're not allowed to eat anyway. So there's no leniency for preparing food. And the other things are permitted on Yontif. It's exactly like Shabbos, including the prohibition of Hotzah. Not allowed to carry on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the only weekday during the year where the prohibition of carrying is Shayach. Otherwise, only Shabbos. Yontif does not... Yom Kippur could fall on Shabbos too. But if it falls on a weekday, that's the only possible weekday that could fall under the prohibition of carrying on Shabbos. There is one shita in the Amoraim. The Gemara brings one shita in the Amoraim that the prohibition to carry is only formulated by Shabbos and does not apply on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says, the Gemara uses one of the strongest languages of rejection. It says, Bedusahi. That is a made-up, nonsensical...
Bogus.
Shita, bogus. Oh, I like that. Excellent, excellent. Bedusa, bogus. Even have the same type of sounds associated with it. I like it. So the Gemara rejects that very strongly, but it is interesting to know that there was an Amora who did hold that way. But again, certainly...
Why did they bring it down? Just to say, hey, what
an idiot. An Erev works on Yom Kippur, the same way it works on Shabbos.
That's what I
yeah.
thought, but
yeah.
you never know.
Erev is...
something.
Yeah, an Erev works on... You might think it doesn't work because the power of the Eruv not only goes by the walls and the Tzuras HaPesach, the strings around, but the power of the Eruv is in the matzah, or the bread that's kept in one house. And that's the Eruv Chatzeros. If you can't eat it on Yom Kippur, so maybe it shouldn't be relevant to you and you shouldn't be allowed to carry on Yom Kippur. But that's not the din.
Except we have food in our houses.
No, but it says that since you could feed it to a child, you know, it's still relevant to you. Whatever, the Erev does work, to the extent that an Erev works on Shabbos, it works on Yom Kippur too. Now, I mean, the prohibition for carrying Yom Kippur is less severe, right? The prohibition of carrying Yom Kippur is kares, which it is on Shabbos too, but there's no skila. If you do it with warning and with witnesses seeing you on Shabbos, then you're chayav skila. But on Yom Kippur, you're not chayav skila. You would only be chayav kares and malkus. Those of you who use the Erev in Washington Heights would assume that in Washington Heights that there would be no Isser Skila anyway, because an Erev only works if what we call an Erev only works when the prohibition of carrying there is only the Rabbanan. It doesn't work in an area where the prohibition of carrying is a Deraisa. So if you use the Erev in Washington Heights, it means that you hold that the prohibition of carrying in Washington Heights, even without an Erev, would only be the Rabbanan, so you wouldn't be Chayav Skila anyway for carrying in Washington Heights. Ein bein Shabbos v'yom kippurim el shezdon melacha b'Shabbos b'skil v'yom kippurim b'karis. That the maximum penalty you can get for Yom Kippur is karis, and the maximum penalty you can get for Shabbos is skila, stoning. Mikol makom itiru zichron levracha lekanev yarak. You're allowed to prepare a vegetable for eating on Yom Kippur b'yom kippurim min amincha olamala, starting in mid afternoon. Kedei shenimtza oso muchan le'erev miyad masheinu mutar b'Shabbos. You're allowed to prepare a vegetable on Yom Kippur when it doesn't fall on Shabbos for eating that night. Some say it's because you'd be too distraught if you couldn't even prepare a vegetable for eating later. Some say no, so you should be distraught that you're dealing with this vegetable and preparing the vegetable eating, and you're like, oh, I can't eat it now, I really want to eat this vegetable. So there's two interpretations of whether it's for your benefit or for your to make Yom Kippur extra severe. So we don't do that on Yom Kippur. The minig is we even don't do preparing vegetables on Yom Kippur. The rest of the details are Maseches Yoma. In all places and all times, males and females, if you did malacha on this day, so you neglected to perform the positive commandment and you violated a negative commandment, as we wrote already. I'm hoping